Summit County is opening its Burn Smart program to all Summit County residents. In the studio with details, I have Environmental Health Director Phil Bondurant, along with Brianna Sidaway. She's the program coordinator for the Summit Wasatch County Chapter of Habitat for Humanity. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Phil, let's start with you. What is Burn Smart?
Burn Smart is a collaborative effort between us and us as the Summit County Health Department, the Habitat for Humanity Wasatch BAC, and Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. It's a collaborative effort to reduce wood-burning stoves in our area in an effort to improve air quality, both immediately and in the near future. And it's a volunteer program that helps us improve air quality, but allows the community to get involved as well and really play a part in our proactive effort to improve air quality.
So there's some kind of grant money available here, and that's what you're using then to find applicants to who are willing to change their wood-burning devices over?
Correct. Yeah, we back in early 2018 applied for a grant. Habitat for Humanity was the individual that put the grant together, the group that put the grant together, and that money is going to be used to administer the grant as well as swap out some of these stoves for some individuals in our area.
Okay, so Brianna, talk a little bit more how Habitat's involved besides going after the grant.
Patrick, yeah, so we have three main programs with Habitat. There's home ownership, education, mainly financial education to prepare for home ownership, and home repair. And that's really where this Burn Smart fits in, is an opportunity to improve homes and better air quality for families that live in them. It's really our position there.
So if people are interested in applying for this, do they apply to you or are they applying through the county?
So they can go through the county's website. So summitcountyhealth.org/burnsmart is where the application is. They just apply online. We'll be reviewing it and be in touch.
So who can apply? Everyone?
Yeah, anyone. Anyone can apply. This is a income-based program, and we look for applicants of every background. It doesn't matter what your income is, there's really an opportunity for everyone to be involved.
So what's the criteria in terms of who gets the grants?
We have a scale we're following with that. We have a kind of a rebate for those who are more financially stable, and for those who have more of a need, whether for health reasons or maybe they're not able to cut the wood, supply the wood for themselves, we're able to put a little bit more money into helping them.
Okay, so Phil, how much money is there?
So it's the EPA awarded us $120,000 over the next 2 years.
And how far can that go?
That is to be determined. We're not quite sure. We're estimating that the average repair is going to, retrofit is going to cost around $4,000. But again, that, as Brianna alluded to, that's going to depend on a need among the family, whether it's a primary heat source or a secondary heat source, and some of those other restrictions in the household that may result in health or immunocompromised individuals. So we're not exactly sure how far it's going to go. We know we're going to push it as far as it will take us, and based on that sliding scale that we've discussed, we'll determine exactly how far that's going to go.
So I guess the biggest cost then is just running some kind of gas line to the existing fireplace or
right,
pulling out a wood-burning stove and adding. I mean, what would you add?
Yeah, that's what we've been told, is that it's going to depend on the availability of that gas line and getting that gas line from the house to where that insert is going to be installed. In most cases, their traditional fireplace can be left, the brick and mortar fireplace can be left in place. The flue can be capped so that it's no longer an access into the home, and then the insert can be built into the fireplace. So that's really not as difficult as it would seem, but running that gas line could result in drywall being cut out and typical construction costs with any retrofit. So that's going to be dependent upon the age of the home, the size of the home, the length of the run. So it's kind of up in the air based on the situation.
So we're doing this again. Part of it is just to help keep the air clean. How bad is it to burn wood?
We have a really interesting infographic on the Burn Smart website that shows, it's an EPA-created document that shows the plume size from a traditional wood-burning fireplace compared to a gas-burning fireplace. And based on that infographic, a wood-burning fireplace emits 1,000 times more particulate matter than a gas-burning appliance does. So there's inklings in the community that we're starting to see inversions up here. Some believe it's the creep from the Salt Lake Valley, and there's probably some truth to that based on pressures and other weather-related issues. But there's also that weather-related issue that, or the inversion-related issue that we're creating ourselves. And so we have control over things like this where we can be proactive and begin to make decisions that affect the future of our air quality. And we've found that wood-burning fireplaces, based on the spikes we see around Christmas time and Thanksgiving and cold snaps, indicates that our increases in PM 2.5 are coming from wood-burning fireplaces. The traffic that comes through here, we can't really control because the majority of our traffic is not registered here in Summit County. So an emissions program wouldn't be as effective as you might think. So we have to start looking at these other issues that can improve air quality and come up with innovative ways to deal with it.
Yeah, and I'm guessing part of the concern, though, you can certainly, swap out the devices, wood versus natural gas. But at the same time, people with wood burning, a lot of that time it's free for them. They'll go and cut their own wood and they have a free, source then of fuel. Whereas now we swap them out and they're going to have to come up with money for increased bills.
Sure, and that's definitely something that we've considered. That's why this isn't a mandatory program by any means. But there are individuals in our community that at one time in their life were capable of cutting their own wood, or they had family members that could cut their own wood, and now they don't have that. And so they're actually paying for others to cut their wood. And so if there's an opportunity where we can improve the quality of life for them, gas inserts are actually more effective at heating a room than a traditional wood-burning fireplace because of the fans and the other equipment that's in there. So if we're looking at a situation where there's an individual that is no longer capable of cutting or acquiring their own wood, as you've said, free, but there's still a need for that heat source, this is actually a much better solution for them because there is a little cost up front, but based on what we have been told wood costs at this time for somebody else to cut it and bring it to you, your gas bill is actually going to be a lot less. And so those are the people that we're really looking to impact, the ones that are burning it more often. It's not just an aesthetic thing for them, but they're really relying on these wood-burning appliances for heat.
Okay. So when does the application period end?
We haven't really set an end date for that. We're just trying to get as many applications in as we can, kind of see what we have to work with and see where we can put our funding.
Okay. What kind of winter have we had? Have you been out there, Phil, monitoring, our PM 2.5 levels?
So back in October, the health department shifted from our traditional air monitoring equipment to a purple air monitoring system. And we actually have an interactive site, right, or an interactive page on our website that shows the up-to-date readings through the purple air monitors. We expanded from two monitors, one in Quinns Junction and one in Colville, to now where we have eight monitors that we're running. And we've also included the other air monitors in the valley that are personally owned. So when you look at that web page, you see a much broader, more comprehensive outlook on where our air quality is at for that day. The neat thing about PM 2.5 through the purple air system is that you can look retroactively 24 hours, 48 hours, clear back to 30 days prior to see the trends in what has occurred with the PM 2.5. And so it's been really fun to watch that and see what has happened on the broad spectrum across Summit County, Snyderville Basin on the east side, and then compare that to the more, EPA certified model with our BAM model that we were running. And we're running those comparisons side by side to see if there's a correction factor that's needed. So the BAM model is actually an EPA certified device that has been run in our county for the last 8 years. It takes a lot more manpower to keep it running and to report live to the website. And we would get reports that it had gone down, and some of those logistics were a little bit more difficult. Purple Air is much simpler. And so what we're doing is running it side by side. When this season is over, We will do a side-by-side comparison to see what that correction factor is and then correct our purple air monitors to reflect more accurately exactly what's going on.
So again, how do people find that? Do they have to go into the Purple Air website or?
They can go to the Purple Air website and type in the zip code. It'll bring it up. But you can also, we have it linked on the summitcountyhealth.org website. And you go to residents and then outdoor air quality. And the first thing that pops up is this map. And it shows you exactly everything in Summit County. You can pan around and you can see what's happening in Salt Lake versus what's happening with us. And really have a comprehensive understanding of our air quality here in Summit County.
Okay. Anything else people need to know? Phil? Brianne?
Just visit the website, put your application in. We'd love to hear from you and love to help you out.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Phil Bondurant, Dan, Brianna Sitaway. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, yesterday, the Utah League of Cities and Towns coordinated a mock legislative session for some 500 youth across the state. Two of those who participated were from Park City High School. Alex Sletta is mayor of the Park City Youth Council. Olivia Downs is the secretary. They both join me now in the studio, along with one of the co-advisors of the Youth Council, Minda Stockdale. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, Alex, let's start with you. Start by just telling us a little about this youth council. I mean, what is it and how were you elected?
So the youth city council is basically a mock version of the city council, and it's kind of, it allows teens to have more of a say into the government and to really understand what's going on and how it will affect them. And I got elected because I helped co-found the organization back with my freshman year with Maya Levine, and I've just kind of been part of it for the rest of those 4 years, and that's how I got up here. Yeah.
Okay, so what is it that you guys do? I mean, do you meet regularly, weekly, like the council, or?
We do meet regularly, not weekly, roughly monthly with other meetings based on what we need to do. Right now we're working on a project that talks about basically helping teens get more involved in the communities in a way that's going to benefit them. So Park City is kind of not accessible for teenagers as well as we would like. So we're focusing right now on teen discounts for certain organizations.
Okay. And Olivia, you also had to run for election then?
Yeah, and I've also been part of it since our freshman year.
Okay. All right. So you just keep the minutes then as secretary?
Yeah, and work on communication, yeah.
All right. So is it a year-long commitment then from both of you?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So the election is held what? In spring for the coming year then? Is that how it works?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at the end of this year, we'll help elect the leadership for next year.
Okay. Same time that you do the student council at the high school then?
It's
a separate election.
It's a separate election.
It's a separate election.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Besides visiting the legislature like you did last year, and we'll talk about that in just a minute, I mean, what are some of the other things that the group has done, I mean, in the 3.5 years that you've been with it?
So right now, like I said, our project is focused on teen discounts and making the town more accessible for teenagers. So we've sent out a multitude of student surveys to the high school to really hear the voice opinion on what they think Park City needs to be more accessible for the teenagers. So that's what we're working on right now.
Yeah, and we also get to shadow the city council so we can, like, see how local government works and new programs in our community, which is pretty awesome.
Okay, so have you had any response then to the survey? I mean, what is it that you think teens would like access to?
On our most recent survey, we had roughly 240 responses to it. And teenagers, the majority of them are saying that they just feel Park City needs to be more, like, affordable for teenagers because they don't have all the, like, the connections and the money that a lot of, like, the adults do have. So that's basically what they said.
Yeah, and they also, like, we have a lot of events in Park City, but teens sometimes don't know what's going on. So we've also been working on a way mm-hmm. to allow teens to figure out what's happening in our community that's already being offered.
Okay. Well, let's talk about yesterday. There was this mock session. It was put on by the Utah League of Cities and Towns. So what happened, Alex?
So the mock legislation committee talked about a distracted driving bill, which targeted people under 21 and their use of handheld cell phones. So we basically had a mock legislative committee where we had a board of people up front who proposed the bill, and then we had basically like a town hall meeting where citizens, which were actually other YCC members, would approach them and voice like their complaints or their concerns based on the bill. Mm-hmm. And we were able to see some like the pros and cons of what people thought of the bill.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a real bill that's yeah. being proposed,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it's in the Utah State Legislature.
Okay, being sponsored by Representative Carol Spackman Moss, I believe. So what was the consensus? Did this mock legislature approve the bill?
Yeah, so we did pass the bill, but they made an amendment so that it would apply to teens 18 and under and people 70 and older. And yeah, so it did pass in our legislative.
So no complaints from teens about that this should affect everybody? I mean, just because you're younger or older, I mean, isn't that some kind of discrimination? Did that get...
Yeah, a lot of people brought that up.
A lot of people brought that up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And people were saying it should be based on, like, years you've had your license instead of, like, your age, which was I thought was an interesting point that they brought up.
Mm-hmm. All right, so was Representative Moss here listening as part of this, or...?
No, she wasn't.
No, I'm just wondering if it would... if she would have some similar amendments.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I wonder how it's going to play out in the Senate.
Okay, so anything else that is planned for the council with the state legislature, or is that kind of the one day that you spent down there?
Yeah, that's the one day we spent down there.
Okay. Let me see. My understanding is you also attended a session on civil discourse. What did you learn there?
Well, we actually didn't attend that session, mm-hmm. but we went to a session about lobbying. So we learned about what lobbyists do. And we spoke with a lobbyist and learned about, like, legislation that he's arguing for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So was it worthwhile?
Yeah, for sure. And we also got to meet with three different lobby groups, one of which was the Refugee Justice League. So we got to hear about how...
Yeah, and that was very interesting. There's over 700 attorneys who work with certain refugees in order to, like... based on hate crimes or just basically anything they need help with. And we talked a lot about refugees and, like, the 62 million refugees currently right now. We also met with two other special interest groups, one of being a nicotine prevention and control group, and the other was a Sutherland Institute, which was a research type of lobbyist, and we talked about his position on certain legislative bills.
Okay. Well, was it just the two of you, or were there other Park City students involved?
Yeah, there were five of us, all in the U City Council.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the high school and Treasure Mountain Junior High School. On Monday, participated in a We Rise Up event, the objective being to get the highest number of first-time voters to turn out for the 2020 election. Are you guys involved with that as well?
No, but we did participate in the assembly, but we aren't, like, organizing it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, what was your sense of after participating? Was there some excitement for it? Or?
Yeah, and I think definitely the conversation now is more about, like, getting teens their voices heard and their votes heard especially. So I think that was super interesting.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about the Youth Council? You have people lined up since you've been involved 4 years? Are there people that are...
Yeah, this year we got a bunch of new members, which is awesome, so that we can, like, be sure that the club will continue once, because we graduate this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Minda, anything you wanted to add about the group?
I'll just jump in and say that we are so proud of our Youth Council for taking the day to go down and check out our state legislature and all that they contribute to give voice to teens. And we hope that one takeaway was just the accessibility of local government and learning about the process and being able to have lunch with our city council members and state legislators, that they really are interested and care about what you guys care about and are just a phone call or an email away. And along that line, we are wrapping up this year probably in April, and three of our five members are graduating seniors. Mm-hmm. So if you know of a high school age person who's interested in local government, we'd love to have them as part of the Youth Council. We'll start recruiting as the school year gets going, so late August, but they can send me an email in the meantime. And many thanks to the Utah League of Cities and Towns for putting on a great event, and our City Council for their support, mm-hmm. and to Meg Ryan, who is our other advisor who's not here.
All right. So now, do you attend City Council meetings?
Yeah.
Frequently? Mm-hmm. Occasionally?
Yeah, just we do, and we get to shadow them and hear what they're discussing, like, for our city, which is awesome.
Yeah, we often meet. Half the time we meet at the high school on Thursday evenings, and then we meet the other half of the time in City Hall on council night. So we'll sit in on the meeting for about an hour.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, ladies, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
KPCW News Time now. Summit County Councilmember Glenn Wright will be spending some time at the Utah Capitol for these year's legislative session. He joins me now with a look at some of the priority bills for the county, both in support of and against. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's first talk about a bill that furthers Summit County's commitments to environmental sustainability. My understanding is you're working with Representative Steve Handy, a Republican from Layton, as well as Rocky Mountain Power for access to renewable energy. So do we have some legislation in the works?
The legislation is in the works, and we're also working in conjunction with Park City and Salt Lake City and Moab on that legislation. The legislation is in legislative research right now for final drafting.
Is this only about solar, or are we talking about wind and what else?
No, it could include almost any type of renewable energy, and it includes provisions for things like energy efficiency, for battery backup and storage. It really encompasses the entire spectrum of clean, renewable energy.
All right. Another issue the county hopes to tackle this session is one of failing septic systems. We've seen that happen right here in the county. Representative Logan Wild is involved in this, having to do with an involuntary assessment district. As I recall, Summit County formed its own for Silver Creek. What would a bill like this do, or would how much easier would it have been for the county to have put together this Silver Creek district if something like this had been in place?
Yeah, in Silver Creek, we had to get, that was a voluntary assessment district, and we had to get each of the property owners or enough of the property owners in the area to sign up for the proposal in order to make it economically viable. And we were able to do that. But in other areas where you may have just one or two failing septic systems, that may be more difficult. In Silver Creek, we're looking at new development, and people knew that they were going to have to spend money for either a septic tank or for a sewer hookup. In other parts of the county, and that's really all over the county, you may have ones and twos of septic systems failing over a period of time, but we know that over a period of 5 or 10 years, maybe all of them will fail. So it's much harder to get people to sign up under those circumstances voluntarily.
So what's this involuntary district? This kind of forces people to be part of, to become part of it?
It would, yes.
Hmm. So any idea what that would cost somebody? I mean, of course, Utah being the property, you know, rights state that it is, I'm just wondering if this has a tough sled ahead of it.
I really can't predict how tough the sledding will be. I will say that it has gotten the support of UAC, so it's not just Summit County that's thinking about this. We're just kind of leading the charge on this. In terms of the costs, generally speaking, the long-term costs are similar to having to put in a new septic system. What the assessment district does is it puts it in your taxes and it amortizes it out over a long number of years. So over the long period of time, it should not be a major burden on people.
So do you foresee any difficulties in getting it through the legislature?
I don't really have a clear crystal ball on that one. We'll have to see how it goes. I'm certainly hoping that we get success on it. And one of the motivations, I think, where we can get support from other counties, it's really a water quality issue. Failing septic tanks in Summit County mostly feed the Weber River, and there's about 600,000 to 800,000 people downstream of us that rely on the Weber for clean water. It would affect potentially their domestic water systems and their need to improve water treatment systems.
Okay. Let me see. The county also keeping its eye on the Medicaid amendment and repeal bills this session. One bill would seek to add enrollment caps and apply for a waiver to be approved by the federal government. The other would repeal Proposition 3. The first already passed through the full Senate. What kind of impact could that have on Summit County residents?
I think it could have a significant downside to Summit County residents in a couple of different ways. I think if you look at projections of how many people would benefit from Medicaid expansion in Summit County, it's in the several thousand range. And by scaling that back, there could be a large number of people that will not be covered by the Medicaid expansion. But beyond that, the legislature is already looking at Medicaid expansion as a way to claw back money on JRI and mental health issues. And the timing issue on that could be disastrous for the county because any proposal that comes through the legislature that isn't full Medicaid expansion is going to require waivers from CMS. And while there's some optimistic discussions from the legislature that we'll get those waivers, we've been waiting for one waiver from CMS for over a year now. So there could be very significant impacts on county budgets all over the state.
Okay, CMS is what?
CMS is the it's a federal agency, Commission on Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Okay. I guess the big concern there is that, I mean, we mostly think of Medicaid as providing access to health care for low-income people, but as you mentioned, some of those funds do go towards different programs in the community. One of those, I think, is drug court. So that is at risk, then, of going away?
Not on that one proposal for Medicaid, but on accompanying proposals that we've heard about in the legislature. They're anticipating that some Medicaid funds will come in, and there are proposals to claw back some of that money from JRI and drug court and mental health funding. And the timing on that could be disastrous.
Yeah. The second bill would repeal Proposition 3. Can lawmakers do that?
Yes, they can. Fortunately, from what I read this morning, that bill died, or it actually didn't pass through the committee.
Okay.
So is it completely dead? I'm not sure, but it failed to get out of committee yesterday or the day before.
Well, I guess they would have had a hard time explaining themselves. But, I mean, I guess so there are no protections for public initiatives then that pass like this, huh?
No, there are not. A public initiative is considered a law which can be amended by the legislature. The suit that the folks supporting Prop 2 are bringing may, if they're successful, affect that at the margins, though. So we'll have to see how that legal battle turns out.
Of course, that's against the medical marijuana replacement
yes.
bill. Yeah. Correct. Correct.
Yeah, and one of their provisions was that the legislature went too far.
And I know another bill that we've heard about from County Manager Tom Fisher is the concern over the possible change to sales tax distribution. Right now, I think it's split between point of sale and population. It's talking about going all towards population. Any updates on that?
Not yet. That's going to be a pretty controversial bill if it goes down. We don't know how that's going to go, but we're certainly very concerned about that. And the argument I would make to the legislature is we're interested in acquiring the Olympics for 2030. If you take away our sales tax revenue from a point of sale, that would mean that the state is asking Summit County taxpayers to support all the expansion of services that would be entailed with the Olympics, and that is totally unfair.
Okay, but at this point, nothing yet. Is that what you're saying?
Nothing yet. There are some proposals out there. I haven't even seen the specifics on it yet.
All right. And then finally wanted just to bring up, I know that this was a bill that the county would like to see drafted. I don't know the specifics of it other than it would deal with oil and gas lines. And this would have to do with what we saw a few years ago with the Tesoro pipeline that they eventually withdrew.
That's correct. It relates to the old Tesoro pipeline, but it's directly related to a bill that passed last year, SB 191, which was primarily aimed at land use issues in the Uinta Basin, but also included a provision for transportation of oil and gas. Now, the legislature was kind of hoodwinked on this. They said, oh, this is just applying, you know, saying that counties can't restrict oil and gas transportation via trucks. But that provision was not in the bill. So it also applies to oil and gas pipelines. That would put any regulation of that under the Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining and take it out of county hands. We would have been really powerless against the Tesoro pipeline a few years ago if that provision had been in place.
Okay. Anything else, Sean?
So we're trying to get that modified.
Anything else you'd like to mention, Glenn?
Well, there's a ton of stuff. We could probably talk for an hour about this, but those are the high points for today. The legislature is a continuing, changing operation, and we'll have to just, go with the flow and see what happens over the next 6 weeks.
Okay. Glenn Wright, member of the Summit County Council, thanks for your time this morning.